The Infrastructure Show is brought to you by Wyss Janney Elsner Associates, engineers, architects, and materials scientists, solving complex problems in contemporary and historic structures since 1956. Learn more at wje.com.
Welcome to The Infrastructure Show. I'm your host, Professor Joseph Schoffer, and I'm the director of Northwestern University's Infrastructure Technology Institute.
And I'm your co-host, Tom Herman.
The Infrastructure Show is designed to present to listeners the reality of America's infrastructure, its condition, why it is the way it is, and what can be done about it.
Transit service in low-density suburbs is usually provided with buses operating on local streets. Rail transit on separate rights-of-way is too costly, given modest ridership levels. But providing bus service in contemporary U.S. suburbs can be a challenge both to the bus operator and the travelers themselves. Secure paths for getting to and from bus stops may not exist, and protected bus stops may be rare. Modern suburbs often decline to provide sidewalks to save money because they see no need or because they choose to use the space for something else, extra lanes on arterial streets, street parking, or simply larger lawns.
To encourage transit ridership, it's important to offer seamless transportation, safe, efficient, and fast connections between origin and destination, including getting to and from the bus stops. Here to talk with us about the challenges of providing seamless bus infrastructure in suburban communities is Michael Bolton. Michael is Deputy Executive Director of PACE, the Chicago Metropolitan Area's suburban bus system. Mike, thanks so much for talking with us today.
It's nice to join you, Joe.
So give us a primer on PACE. What are the markets that you serve? What services do you offer? And how many people do you carry on a daily basis?
Well, PACE serves the roughly 3,600 square miles that comprise the six-county area that is the Northeastern Illinois Regional Transportation Authority. We operate bus service in all six of the counties, and we operate cooperatively some service with the CTA within the city. Limited service there in order to connect to a number of CTA rail stations. We carry about 34 to 36 million rides a year on a number of different services. Fixed route service, we have ADA paratransit service, that's the complementary service required by the Americans with Disabilities Act, and we operate that throughout the entire region. In addition to that, we have service with a number of townships or communities throughout the area where we support their operation of paratransit service, primarily designed for the elderly and the disabled. And then we have just introduced a new service type that goes a little bit to the question that we're going to talk about today, and this is call-and-ride service. And that is an idea that we freely admit we stole from Denver and Rappahannock Valley out in Virginia. So in addition to that, we also operate the Vanpool, and we are the regional rideshare provider.
And when we talk about providing seamless service, what exactly is seamless service?
Seamless service for us is, well, the simplest and best example of seamless service would be a connection from a neighborhood directly to either the place where the person is going in the suburbs or where we feed a train station or we feed a CTA station, and then people can get to where they're going that way. In other areas, seamless service is trying to reduce the amount of walking that people would have to do, what we call the first mile and last mile.
So since you mentioned walking, let's talk for a second about pedestrian access. What infrastructure do you need, and what do you typically encounter in terms of access for pedestrians?
Well, just for your listeners, we are going to be producing a book or a guideline pamphlet called Transit Supportive Guidelines. That will be coming out again. It'll be an upgrade of something we developed a number of years ago, and that will be available probably in August or September of this year. But in many parts of the region, we have a bus stop sitting in the middle of a green space, and there is no way to get there except by walking on the road. That's what we see in a lot of places. Other places, we see sidewalks, and in other places, we see bike paths that serve as sidewalks. So it really does change depending upon what part of the region you happen to be in. The older suburbs in Cook County and some parts of DuPage County, they have sidewalks that have been built in and have usually been called for as part of the development. In the newer suburbs, in many cases, especially those that were built in the 70s and 80s, you don't have as many sidewalks.
What are some of the challenges presented by a bus stop in an area where there's not sidewalks?
Trying to find a safe place to stop is the biggest one, and not just simply because in many cases we're being asked to stop on streets that have 35, 45, in some cases 50-mile-an-hour speed limits. But the other issue is for when the person gets off the bus, what do they step onto? In some cases, it is a safe landing area. In other cases, it's a quickly sloping drain culvert that's along the side of the road.
So do the local governments, municipalities, do they have any responsibility for providing pedestrian access?
It really does depend upon the local building codes, Joe. It's all part of what they have allowed to be built.
And do you have conversations with these municipalities to try and point out the transportation advantages of having sidewalks?
Oh, yeah. And in many cases, that's one of the things that's really been quite good lately, is that this idea of a comprehensive pedestrian bicycle infrastructure has really begun to be part of the dialogue with communities. And I think a big part of that goes to the discussions that have been taking place through CMAP, Chicago Metropolitan Agency for Planning, and its Go to 2040 program.
And then one of the questions, since we live in this environment where we can have a pretty harsh winter sometimes with a lot of snow, who's responsible where there are sidewalks? Who's responsible for keeping them clear? Does PACE clear the bus stop? Is it up to the municipality, or how does that get decided?
It's usually the responsibility of the municipality. When we install a bus shelter, and especially if it's an ad shelter, one of the things that we will do is we have an agreement that we sign with the local community where they take the responsibility of maintaining the shelter for us. And that's for a share of the revenues that are generated by the revenue from the ads.
So do you find that communities welcome shelters, or is that a negotiated settlement, if you will?
It really does depend upon the community, because the communities that take the shelters, make some revenue off them, but it also provides a convenient place for their residents to wait for buses. The other communities might like a shelter, but they're not allowed by their sign ordinance to put an ad revenue shelter in place. And so in some of those cases, we are able to negotiate a non-ad shelter, but in many of those cases, often they are older areas, you have a very, very narrow sidewalk. That's why I say there are a lot of different things that impact the decision to put a shelter in place.
How important do you think shelters are for passengers?
Well, our surveys suggest that they are relatively high importance. In other words, about 80-85% of the people who use the service really would like to have more shelters throughout the region.
And do they report at all what they really want about a shelter? Is it the light? Do they want heating? Do they want some place to sit down? Do you have a sense of what makes it attractive to them?
Actually, we do. It's the primarily what they're looking at is the shelter itself. Is something that's going to break the rain or the snow from hitting them? In some cases, it's a location demands a seat because there's nothing else around it. Those are the sorts of things that we generally hear from people.
And then how do you decide where to install them when you do?
We've really tried to say that the areas where there is either high boarding activity or significant transfer activity, especially where there are transfer locations where the schedules don't quite meet up nicely and there's not a lot of opportunity for people to go someplace else to wait for a bus.
And then for communities that want to do this infrastructure investment, how do you make the case, or do you go to them to make a case of return on investment for money that they might put into it?
Well, that's certainly part of the responsibility of our government and community relations team. They are the ones that really go out and meet with the communities and make the case to encourage communities to put shelters up.
If you were making that case in a nutshell, what would you tell them?
What I would tell them is it creates a sense of place that's much more attractive for either their residents or the workers who are coming to work in their community. There is a significant return on investment in the sense that it does create an opportunity for both residents and employees to have a safe place to wait.
Do you find that commercial areas, businesses, are more receptive to the idea of bus shelters than residential areas?
Interestingly enough, the communities that do put the shelters in tend to have them in the commercial areas. And one of the reasons for that is that in many cases, smaller businesses do not like bus patrons standing inside their door to wait for the bus.
Oh, okay.
So it gives them a sense of comfort that there's a safe and convenient location for people to wait to catch your bus.
And Pace operates on-demand bus service for the handicapped in the entire Chicago metropolitan area. What are some of the unique challenges of offering this service?
Well, when we're serving people with disabilities, the most significant thing that we are looking for is ways to group as many people as we can in order to provide the service at a relatively low price. It costs us about $40 a passenger if we're only carrying one passenger. If we can get more people into that vehicle, we begin to bring that price down a little bit. But in terms of why the service is important, it provides people with disabilities the same ability to get to their place of work, their school, their activity center, their stores. It really does create a sense of being a real part of the community.
So, Mike, is there a connection between providing adequate or even high-quality pedestrian infrastructure and the ways that you can serve the mobility limited?
Oh, yeah. I think that one of the things that when we were talking about shelters earlier, one of the biggest problems that we've had in locating shelters is the fact that we can go out and plunk down a pad and put a shelter on it, but if the community doesn't have a sidewalk program or doesn't allow access to that shelter, it's really an island in a sea of grass and mud. So the ability to have those shelters tied to a pedestrian network really does improve the opportunity for people with disabilities to ride the regular fixed route service. All of our buses are equipped with lifts or ramps, so we have a fully accessible fixed route fleet. Because people can't get to those fixed route buses, in many cases, they end up having to rely on the paratransit service. And as good as the paratransit service is, and even though we say that we turn no one down, while we're not turning anybody down who calls for a ride, we may not be able to get them exactly where they want to go when they want to go. To you or I, for us, we can say, oh, I'm going to go to work at 7 o'clock today, and just get up, get dressed, head out the door. Somebody who uses a wheelchair to provide their mobility, they have to call 24 hours in advance. Or if they're lucky enough, they've been using the service long enough, they might have a subscription service so that it comes and gets them every day. But the law limits the number of subscription trips that we can carry. So people have to literally compete for a trip. And there is no difference. We cannot discriminate by trip purpose. So we can't say, oh, a work trip is more important than a school trip, than a medical trip, or the trip to the store. We have to treat them all the same. While it is a good service, it does not rise to a level of full mobility that that a fixed route service with a really well done pedestrian network would provide.
So if you had that network, you could mainstream more of the Mobility Limited. That would reduce your costs and increase their quality of service.
That would certainly be the way that we would look at it, yes.
And early in the conversation, you mentioned a service that I think you said you stole from Denver, which in my mind, you said on-demand service. I pictured picking up the phone and saying, can you send a pace bus around my house? Am I picturing that correctly?
Well, we won't come to your house, but we will come to an intersection near you. And you are not calling a dispatch center, you are calling the vehicle itself. And the driver is not answering the phone while he or she is driving. But what you do is you call and you say, I am at so-and-so and I would like to go to, let's say, the train station. And then the driver will say to you, we can pick you up in 15 minutes at the intersection of Algonquin and Gulf, and we will take you to the Arlington Heights train station. Because what we're looking at is essentially an 8-square-mile or 9-square-mile service area that we can effectively serve within an hour. And the reason why we say it's within an hour is because usually we try to anchor the service to a major attractor or generator. So Arlington Heights, for instance, the train station would be the anchor. Up near the College of Lake County, the College of Lake County is the anchor for a service area. And it's worked very, very well. One of the things that it's done for us is it's allowed us to eliminate very, very low productivity fixed route service without denying the people who were using that fixed route service some way of getting around.
So what happens in that case then is the driver is sitting in a lot somewhere waiting for calls?
Yes. Although what we have found is he's not sitting very much. He's moving quite a bit. If he's doing his waiting, it's generally in front of the hospital or the train station or the shopping center that's acting as a terminus or a transfer point in some manner, shape, or form.
So he, in effect, puts his place of business there in an attractive location so people can see him, but it also will accept calls and deviate from that point to pick people up.
That's correct.
So is this what we're likely to see more of in the future? What do you see as the future of bus service or transit service in the suburbs, particularly the low-density suburbs?
I think one of the things that you're going to see is we are engaged in a partnership right now with both IDOT and the Tollway. For IDOT, we are working with them on a bus-on-shoulder program down on I-55, and because of the apparent success of that program, we are looking at a number of other locations where we might be able to use the shoulder to improve the speed of the transit bus. We are also working with the Tollway to create more express bus service so that people either in the suburbs can get into the other suburbs. So somebody who lives in Elgin can get to a job in Schaumburg fairly quickly. People from southern McHenry County can get to work in Schaumburg fairly quickly. So the express bus service is a big part of what we're planning to do. The other thing that we're looking at doing is arterial rapid transit. That's a form of limited stop, high performance service that would operate on a number of major arterials. And certainly, you and I have talked a lot about the 250 route coming from Evanston to O'Hare Airport. Right now, it makes just about every stop. Well, in the future, it would probably have a limited number of stops. There would still be service that would do all the local service on Dempster, but there would be a higher speed service with limited stops. So arterial rapid transit, as we call it, is something of the future. In the less dense areas, we expect to see more of the call and rides coming into play. The other thing that we're going to be looking at is how do we leverage existing resources that are out there? So, for instance, how do we get local cab companies to partner with us to provide some of that local service, that last mile, first mile, so that in areas where there are people that need to get to the train, rather than us having to operate a big bus, maybe we can get some local taxi service to work with us. And that's one of the things we see coming out of the Ventura program in the future is because it's functioning like a debit card, somebody could swipe or tap or tap a near-field communication phone and do the fare payment that way using some sort of an application on the phone. Those are some of the things that we're seeing that in the near future.
Ventura card is this universal fare card.
That's correct.
That's coming to the Chicago metropolitan area.
Correct.
Sounds like we have a lot to look forward to. I'm particularly anxious to get that connection to O'Hare so I can get out of the taxi and ride your bus.
All right.
Michael, thanks very much for talking to us and educating us about some of these interesting issues. I appreciate your time.
So it was a pleasure to talk to you, Jerry.
Glad to talk to you. Thanks. Bye.